All right, so we are in MSR world again. It's always fun to come here, especially in one of these really awesome meeting rooms, talking about security-related stuff, particularly security on the web and transactions and purchasing and things like this. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Shuo Chen of Internet Services Research Center. I'm working on web security and also privacy problems.
Excellent.
I'm Shaz Fadir. I work in the Research and Software Engineering Group in MSR, and I work on program verification, testing, software engineering problems.
Awesome.
I'm Rui Wang. I'm a PhD from Indiana University, and I am intern here and with Shaw.
Excellent. So you're an intern.
Let me add one. There is another author, Xiaofeng Wan, who is an associate professor in Indiana. He's my advisor, Reese advisor.
But now you mentioned author, and so you've written this paper, How to Shop for Free Online.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course, we're going to talk about that today. It's very interesting, a very provocative title. Tell us a little bit about what's going on here.
Yeah, so the easiest way to... Let me describe the end result first.
Sure.
So the easiest way is, for example, we can... We bought some random things from various web online stores. And the fun part is that because of many logic bugs in these online stores, we can actually bought things for free, or we can just pay arbitrary prices that we determine arbitrarily. So as I said, these are due to logic bugs in web programs.
Mm-hmm.
So the more concretely, the situation is like this. In today's e-commerce, it is very common to involve a third-party cashier. For example, if I want to buy this, let's say, agility cream from your store, so I don't directly pay you, and instead I will pay Reed, the cashier, and it's between the merchant and the cashier. It's all your business, right? I just talk to you and I talk to the cashier. But if you two are not careful enough, you are not thorough enough in terms of your logic correctness,
mm-hmm.
because I'm malicious, I can arbitrarily send messages to you, and to you I can interleave all these messages,
mm-hmm.
and it turned out that there are many possibilities for a malicious attacker to get free items.
Now, e-commerce, if I may use that term, is something that's been around since the late 90s, right?
Yes.
I mean, blossomed in mid-late 90s. So my question that I'd like to ask you is the vulnerability is with the cashier and the second party or first party that's handling the communication, where are you seeing most of the flaws take place? Are they taking place on the cashier side of the house, or the way the data is formed and managed on the second or first party, in other words, the seller?
Yes. So I think the most interesting part of our research is that we found that the part which is very problematic is actually not only on the merchant, not only on the cashier, but their interactions.
Hmm.
So it's like you two talk to each other, but you assume that you have already handled something. And you also assume that the cashier has already handled something.
Sure.
But at the end, if you two are not very thorough, then there is a secret path for me as the shopper to get through.
Interesting.
So that's why we think this kind of three-party communication scenario is particularly interesting.
Hmm. Interesting. Now, do you see any cases where there's more than three parties?
So at this moment, I think in fact, we do see some situations where we can naturally model the problem as like four parties, But the thing is, we can, to simplify the situation, mm-hmm. we just model the thing as one trusted party, another trusted party,
yes.
and all other parties
okay.
are one malicious party.
Interesting.
So in that way, we can reason about the problem in a simplified way.
Excellent. So now you've done, as an intern, essentially you're a PhD student that comes, does a lot of work for free. I'm just kidding. I mean, you're like, very critically important to MSR and Microsoft in general. I'm only playing around. We have interns all over the company. So you come in and actually helped code and architect this situation?
Actually, he's much more than a helper. He was the driving force of this project.
Awesome. So what led you, so I'm going to ask you then, what led you to start this project up?
It is like we, I think it's just like Shaw mentioned, mm-hmm. We want to see that in this kind of, maybe a few years ago, mm-hmm. we see the web stores when the people want to check out. It is like the shopper will give the credit card information mm-hmm. to the web store, and then the web store will handle everything. And then now seems the thing have a little bit changed, which is now the cashier service such as PayPal, Amazon Payments, or Google Checkout,
mm-hmm.
they handle the payment part, and the store only handles the order.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very interested to see that if this small change may bring any security implications.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the starting point. We want to see maybe this small change can bring something that's really surprising.
Mm-hmm.
So we really, I mean, to study those details of this distance and see if we can get any chance. And I think the result is kind of surprising, because we really found that, you can fool the system through this way, that way, a bunch of ways, and finally you can get something that for free or with a price that you set. So,
that's very,
very
interesting.
And in fact, I think this has a bigger context, which is about web service integration. So today, a lot of big websites are exposing their services through web APIs.
Yes.
So if you want to build your website, you just call these web APIs. So in this sense, it's very similar to the traditional programming, where you can provide a library like a libc,
mm-hmm.
and then I as the application developer, I call these library functions.
Mm-hmm.
In this sense, it's similar. But there is a big difference here, which is in the online situation, the client, the service website, and the application website, they are distributed across the internet.
Yes.
The trust relation between these three are very, very vague.
Mm.
So to reason about security in this context, is going to be very different from what we need for traditional programming. So that's from that angle, we think it is very interesting, and it happened that this online situation is a nice area in that.
Absolutely. Context. Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about, as we kind of alluded to, now that we're in sort of this cloud computing haze, or days, if you will,
right.
It is going to be the future. We're going to be depending on distributed services. And so if I'm on the client, am I sending some sort of malformed JavaScript, malformed JSON? What am I doing that can take advantage of this from the client, as opposed to being out having things out in the network that are trying to break into communication between the seller and the cashier, which is traditional hacking. So what I want to do is I got my hacking jacket on. How am I taking advantage of these vulnerabilities?
My understanding is that the experiments that Reed did to expose these hacks,
yes,
they were essentially launched by monitoring the traffic. And it was simply you detect the traffic is coming in,
mm-hmm.
and you sort of drop some packets strategically, and you introduce some other packets strategically. So you are not even trying to do any crypto stuff here.
Okay.
It's not like the crypto stuff was broken and then he was able to decrypt something. He was just adding packets that were unexpected from the point of view of the protocol. Governing the interaction between these parties.
Excellent. So, I mean, to be clear, the reason I asked that question is that because it was important to bring it down to the level of where these vulnerabilities exist. And as you mentioned, it's at the protocol level with packets,
correct.
Not at the level of, hey, I go to Amazon's website, I'm crafty, I'm going to add some special code or something to the input box. That type of thing has been dealt with, to some degree, enlarged by this whole verify input. This is a different
like a
world.
Cross-site scripting.
Exactly.
Right.
So I just wanted to get down to the level of
right. So these kinds of attacks that exploit flaws in protocols are of a very different nature compared to things like what Shua mentioned, cross-site scripting attacks, or if you go down at the level of, say, C code,
yeah.
you know, these stack smashing attacks based on buffer overruns. So they are very low-level implementation level bugs,
mm-hmm.
but these are sort of higher level correctness bugs that are being exploited in this case.
Okay, so give me an example of what a higher-level correctness bug is.
Yeah, okay, so... I think one of the examples is we can suppose I want to
sure,
buy
agility
this.
Cream. All right.
Agility cream, yes. Yes.
I need some of that. We all need some of that.
It's from you, and I want to buy this.
Uh-huh.
And you said you say this is $10,
mm-hmm.
and of course when I you send me a message mm-hmm. which says please take. This order. Please take this message to the cashier to pay $10 for this order. Let's say this is order number 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
I need to pay $10 in the cashier to you, and then the cashier will send you a notification, and then you will ship the agility cream to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the normal.
I understand.
Workout. Checkout workflow. But in this case, what we found was that we are able to basically, if I myself also register for a seller account, I'm able to get your message, and then I can pay the $10 to myself because I'm the buyer and the seller.
Mm.
I can play buyer and seller at the same time, and I can go to the cashier. I say that I want to pay to Shuochen Prime, which is myself again.
Yeah.
So in that case, because of the misunderstanding between your two, actually the cashier will send you a message saying that sure, just paid $10 to order 1, 2, 3 of Shuochen Prime.
Mm-hmm.
That is all depend on whether you are careful enough. If you only check it is $10, it is order 1, 2, 3, and your order 1, 2, 3 is pending,
mm-hmm.
then if you think that's a sufficient condition, you ship the product to me, then you don't receive the money because basically I just move my $10 from my left pocket to the right pocket and ask him to send you a message.
I see.
Right.
So in other words, the problem is that the merchant just verified that a certain amount of money was paid for a certain order but forgot or omitted to verify that in fact it was paid to itself. It was paid to some other person, some other... And that information was also there in the notification it got from the cashier. but it just didn't even look at it.
Interesting.
Yeah, and also some other examples include I can buy this thing and then get a payment proof, and I can reuse the payment proof to buy another item. And or I can place an order for this one. But after I make the payment, because this is maybe let's say $5, but that is $20. Mm. After I pay for this, I can use that payment proof to check out this. Mm. So it's like they are.
So in other words, in that case, they're not even verifying the ID of the
In that case, it's because of
it's
the binding between the the order and the payment. You know, I talked to you about the order. I talked to him about the payment.
Agreed. I understood.
But the binding, sometimes the binding is not strong enough.
Hmm. Interesting. So you're going to say something?
I think so. Just said that. Yeah, it is like you talk about why not the store just checks the ID. Actually, there are multiple IDs, and the security context of those IDs are not so clear for the store or for the cashier.
Interesting.
So you may not just sufficiently check.
So the point being, so I'm just trying to understand this myself also a little bit more clearly. Each order has an ID associated with it. Sometimes it's not very clear which payment has been made for which ID. That's the confusion. Is that a good way to think about it?
Yes. Like maybe order can have an ID, and also maybe the payment can have an ID, and maybe there is something like a transaction can have an ID.
Too many IDs.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
And unclear what each ID is doing.
In some situations, they also involved web servers session ID. So when we access a website, there is a concept called session.
Yep.
That has an ID, and sometimes the binding there is broken.
Interesting. And also, it's interesting that in this context, because a lot of us do shopping in anonymous context, right? In other words, you don't have to sign in to a store to buy something unless you want to sign in a store. Then they can federate your identity, or at least understand or authenticate your identity. Whereas in this case, a lot of us will shop for a book and just give them where we want it to ship to, give them our credit card information, and press go, as opposed to creating an account and really giving an identity. But, I mean, I'm still a little concerned in terms of this stuff, because my assumption would be that all of the communication that's happening between the buyer, the seller, and the cashier is going to be encrypted and protected, yet you found ways in which to sort of reason about an encrypted blob of information. I mean, in some sense, can you explain a little more? I mean, you have to understand that this is...
Right. So the question... So I guess what Charles is asking is that all these messages that are flowing back and forth, they're all encrypted.
Yes.
How did you even know what was the information content inside those messages? And I think the real answer is that you began your study by studying the source code of some of these...
The source code
that was generating the communication. And that's how you built your understanding of what these messages could be about.
Yes.
Is that correct?
But that's... I think that is only part of the answer. And I guess your question is, all the messages are encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
How can we make any sense out of the data?
Yes.
And in this case, actually, the encryption is not really a protection here.
Hmm.
Because I'm the end point of a communication channel, right? I have an encrypted channel between you and me, another channel between cashier and me, mm-hmm. and you have an encrypted channel. So mm-hmm. I'm at the end point of two encryption channels. So I always see the plain text. Right? It's not like a, you know, encryption is to protect the data.
In transit. Understood.
So it's like all these attacks. It's like if I whisper to him, if someone in the middle can hear the what I'm saying, then that's breaking.
Of course, and then they can corrupt the data and actually do worse
yes,
things.
But in our case, we are not in the sniffer position. We are an end point.
You're the end
you
point.
Send the message to me, I play with the messages. That's all.
The party that is doing the encryption itself is the adversary.
Yes.
Right.
Interesting. So, of course, this all begs the question, I mean, clearly, this doesn't happen all the time. I know certainly if I order something from Company X, I'm not going to mention any company names here. Typically, there is going to be a third-party cashier and also a third-party shipper, right? So I bought this thing on Site X. I paid for it, let's say Site X or Site Y, and then I get shipped to me from the actual place that they were selling on behalf of.
Yes.
So you have three channels.
Yes.
Isn't a solution to this problem, when we talk about encryption, that instead of sending me plain text that lands on my client, I have to have some software that can crack it based on, you know, the key exchange model. So let me ask even a better, simpler question. What's the solution to the problem you just mentioned to us and showed us the agility cream, and he gave us the nice mapping of the three-party, the triangle?
Yeah.
What's the solution to the problem?
So,
how do we protect against it?
I think so. For this paper, the main focus is on exposing the problem. But we did spend some preliminary effort working on solutions.
Okay.
So, in fact, one of the sections in the paper is about using a verification tool developed by Shaz and his team.
Nice.
To check security properties of a logic model extracted from the merchant code and the cashier code. So basically, we built a model to represent the logic of these two parties, and then we use the tool to automatically check the correctness of the protocol. And we did find the same set of logic bugs that we found by manually inspecting the web traffic.
Interesting.
So I think, I don't know whether it is fair to say that the real solution seems to be that we need to apply this kind of formal reasoning to the web code, especially when they integrate their services, each other's services. So in that way, we can really carefully examine the logic.
Would this be implemented in some sense as a kind of a verification service? Or are you talking about static analysis on their code base? I mean, where is this reasoning happening?
I think that even before we get to the point of whether the verification happens dynamically or statically, there is the first step of figuring out exactly what is the specification that needs to be verified.
Sure.
And it turns out that in this particular case, the flaws were happening because the specifications were actually fairly subtle. Mm. And there is this potential for miscommunication between these various parties to say when communication is good formally means that you have to write down some security invariants, and they are basically making formal statements about various critical pieces of data that are moving around in these messages and getting stored in the various databases at the merchant, or at the CAS and so on.
Mm.
So writing that kind of specification in the first place is kind of tricky, and for a variety of reasons. First of all, the specification is subtle. Mm. The second thing is that unlike most protocol development work, where the entire protocol is developed by one person or, you know, a team of people working together, the situation here is very different. In this situation, some part of the protocol agents are developed by, say, you know, the cashier organization, Amazon or Google by checkout. Some other part of the protocol agents are developed by the merchant. And really, there is no communication, as far as I can tell, in the real world, there is really no communication between these two development teams at the point the code is being written. Hmm. So this is a very different situation from the kind of protocol development that happens, say, when you develop the TCP/IP protocol. You know, one organization, a group of very smart people develop some protocol, and then they verify it, and then they deploy it. Here, the situation is somewhat ad hoc.
Hmm.
So that exacerbates the complication of verification. In addition to the subtlety of the invariance, there's this other problem, which is that these development teams, they're not organizationally related. They're not geographically co-located as well.
Sure.
So I think I can only postulate what the way forward could be.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that maybe there's a little bit more collaboration among these development organizations.
Mm-hmm.
They publish contracts, abstract contracts for these various APIs that they expose. And these contracts would be akin to, you know, the kind of contracts you provide on libraries.
Sure. Interfaces.
The interfaces, right?
Yeah.
And then when people write code that calls APIs that are exported by somebody else, then they can try to reason at the call side because they have the interfaces available whether they are doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole sort of verification machinery, this compositional verification machinery has to be in place to make sure that at least the protocol is explicated. After that, whether you do all that checking via static analysis or you do all that checking at runtime is a separate issue. So there's pros and cons of each.
Sure.
Static analysis means that you don't pay the cost of runtime instrumentation. There's no runtime overhead of this kind of checking.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's important, maybe that's not important. I don't know enough about the problem yet.
Mm-hmm.
Another advantage of static analysis is that you get more coverage across the behaviors of the system. The difficulty of static analysis is that usually it's imprecise, because it's trying to reason statically about dynamic program behaviors, especially in the context of web applications. There's a lot of indirection, and that makes things harder to reason about. Things are very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
If things are especially dynamic, it makes life harder for static analysis. So maybe runtime verification might be a good interim solution.
Sure. Okay. Very interesting. But I mean, the point is, you guys you've found this problem, and it's certainly not something that, you know, we think about very often, because as I said, usually when we think about security in this context, it's the cross-site scripting, it's the make sure you validate input on forms, all this very basic stuff that web developers hopefully at this point kind of have a handle of now, although we do see still a fair amount of that happening. So this is really interesting, and as you mentioned, there's not a solution yet, but you have ideas. And sometimes I wonder, if maybe it would involve the creation of even like a security language or a new way of expressing the way, you know, the messages where each party literally speaks the same language. That could be sort of interesting.
Yeah, I think that's promising.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is you're going to be presenting this paper after this is...
Ree is presenting the paper.
Yeah,
right on,
yes.
Man. So this will be up before then.
So you want me to...
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, how you think this is going to be... how your peers are going to react to.
You should, Ree, you should probably mention a little bit about the press this paper has been getting.
I bet. Don't shop anymore.
This paper has been reported by several media, and including the CNN Money, and also Network World, the Register, and several others.
Nice.
Yes. CNET.
Sure.
Some of the points in the news report, I think, is also interesting. Like the CNN Money report, they actually interviewed PayPal and also interviewed some security firm's CEO. Mm-hmm. And it's PayPal says that this problem is not their problem. It is just the web stores, they did something wrong, so they have the problem. If they like do some encryption, or maybe they sign their card, then it's no problem. But I think they didn't read our paper carefully, because actually in our paper, we have 9 attacks, but in seven cases, actually, they're all signing or something, those kind of protections are in place, but we can still play the trick and successfully do the attack.
Sure.
And the security firm CEO, his point is that this is a systematic weakness, and it is because those big companies, PayPal, Amazon, or Google, when they introduce those products, they are not so careful about security, and then when the business grow, then they need to come back and to rethink their solutions and figure out what they need to do to solve this problem.
Mm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point.
Hmm. And so, I mean, I guess just so you know, we don't freak everybody out watching this in terms of doing online shopping, where you have a third-party cashier service.
Actually, this is a good news for them.
because
they can shop for free.
Oh man!
But the bad news is, in fact, all the 9 bugs that we have found have already been patched. So
yeah,
cool.
That's
and you've helped them out.
Yes.
Obviously, you're not just going to buy free stuff and not tell anyone how to do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's really interesting. And look, I mean, the paper goes very deep, which is probably why some of the kind of pop technical press probably aren't going to read the whole thing, and they're going to see the title and read the abstract and read the conclusion. But essentially, you found a number of vulnerabilities that haven't been found before or thought about in basically architectures and implementations, and working on ways of helping to solve it. But your paper doesn't have all the solutions. You guys you have to think it up. You have to write the math, write the logic.
Yeah.
You got to figure that out.
Yes.
Right. There's no. I'm not seeing any easy way to fix these problems. So it requires thinking, and thinking is very tough.
Yes, lots of thinking.
Right.
That's cool. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's great that you guys have found this, and you know, I love the title of the paper. I mean, right away, that's going to get people to read it.
Right.
And I will be really interested to see what your fellow researchers who work in, you know, similar spaces think about this and how that dialogue is going to go, because this opens up a nice can of worms, which is
going to
be...
So it's going to be presented at the end of May? I think May 24th or something?
May 25th.
The Oakland Security Conference.
Excellent.
It's an IEEE conference on security and privacy.
Cool.
So I guess you'll get some feedback from colleagues
and
the community there.
Yeah.
Cool. And I was mentioning to these gentlemen here that Channel 9 will be covering ICSE.
Okay, yeah.
And so I'll see you there.
Yes, I'll
and
be
I think
there.
Maybe we could actually have one of those conversations with one of your peers.
Okay, all right. Sounds
good. Why not?
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, great work. Nice job,
thanks.
Man.
Thank you.
And good luck on the 25th with delivering the I guess it's bad news, but good news. And good luck on figuring out how to solve this in a reasonable way.
Thank you, Charles.
Thank you.
Take care, you guys.
Bye.